Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, welcome to the 376th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Alexander Terentiev, Steve Goot, Connor, and Cole Needham. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Oren Kaplan, and today we are talking about the dual lives of many filmmakers. Matt and I specifically direct both commercials and narrative things. Matt is working on an episodic show. I'm pitching an episodic show and also about to shoot a kind of like an hour-long branded piece, but coming off of just shooting some 15-second commercials last week and pitching on a 60-second commercial that I didn't get today. And so, yeah, I think we're all over the place. And I was talking to you before we were recording about how I'm pitching this episodic show with my friend Julie, and we've been rehearsing the pitch, and it's just so different than pitching a commercial.
So different.
And we thought, why don't we talk a little bit about the differences at all the stages, pitching, prepping, and shooting. We're going to skip post for today. We'll fix that part later. Before we get into it, I just want to remind people we have a Patreon, patreon.com/justshootitpod. It's a place you can help support this podcast if you feel like you get anything out of it, which, by the way, podcast listener Brenton Geyser, I saw he had posted on Facebook that he just got repped by this new company called The Invisible Collective, and it's his first rep as a commercial director. And I knew Brenton was a podcast listener because he'd actually hired me to do some screen replacement shots in this documentary he was working on. And when I saw that he signed with The Invisible Collective, which is Justin Polk's company, who had been on our podcast, and Jessica Sanders is on their roster too, and she's been on our podcast, I like wrote to him like, hey, congrats, you know, that actually the founder of that company has been on our podcast. And then I clicked the article, you know, usually when you sign with a company, there's some
like
press,
a little,
release.
A little black book article or whatever.
So I clicked on the article to read about it, and it said, Brenton first crossed paths with Invisible Collective after hearing Justin Polk, Invisible co-founder and director, on a podcast about filmmaking.
What?
So, anyhow.
Wow.
My point is, some people get something out of this podcast, like Brenton got ripped.
Wow. That's a success story, man. That's pretty good. Way to go, Brenton.
I think you would be surprised by how many of those types of stories exist. Like, people hear someone on our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Tony Franklin told us he has like 7 mentees that just contacted him after he was on
our
podcast.
The show. Yeah, that's right.
So, all those 10% pieces that we thought we would get when we connect people never came to be. But you can make up for that by joining our Patreon. $1 a month, $2 a month, $16 a month. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/justshootitpod. We appreciate anything you give us. It all goes to Noah, our editor, and, you know, some other various fees we have to pay for.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, let's get into it.
I got a question for you, Warren. When you are on either side of this coin, whether you're working on a narrative project or you're working on commercial projects, do you let the other decision makers or stakeholders, do you mention that you do the other side? Do you do this other work, or do you just kind of let yourself seem like a specialist, like a person who exclusively does commercials, let's say, or really knows their way around narrative and that's their bread and butter?
The other people that are on my side of the pitch, or the other people that I'm pitching to?
No. Like, I'm saying just in general, you've already gotten the job. Like, do you bring it up? Are you like, oh yeah, one time I was doing this thing or that, you know?
Yes. If I've already gotten the job, I'm usually a pretty open book. If I was pitching on a narrative thing, I would talk about my movies, about my time at Disney, about episodic stuff, about arcs, about my favorite shows and movies and actors and twists and turns and setups and payoffs. You know, if they went to my website, they'd see it's like all commercials, which, you know, I used to have trailers and all sorts of other narrative things on there. But I basically, I don't think a website does a ton for narrative filmmakers as much as it does for commercial filmmakers. So mine is very much committed to the commercial stuff, and just my about page mentions my narrative things. If I'm pitching on a commercial, I would maybe say like, oh, I've, you know, if I've worked with an actor or something that we're talking about, I might say, oh, I worked with them before on a narrative thing, or, you know. I don't know. It's funny because we have, you know, my friend Tom Morris, another director. He was talking about how his commercial reel doesn't have a lot of like suburbs, like people walking on sidewalks and streets and front yards, which sounds like so uber specific. But you know that in the commercial world, like having people having a conversation on a sidewalk, on a street, is like almost a genre into itself.
Yeah.
And if you want to get a job, like, oh, hey, here's two neighbors talking over their hedges about.
Yeah. Two neighbors talking over their hedges is such a common.
It's a classic thing.
Setup for commercials.
And especially car commercials, like the comedy ones.
Like, hey, new car. Hey, new house. Hey, you know, like great lawn. It's a perfect comparison for two people who have bought different products.
Yeah.
Right. It's just really
and cool. Cars, obviously, that's where you would feature them, usually in a driveway and lawn care, all that stuff. If you're talking to someone, it would be in a front yard usually, or even a backyard, or maybe a barbecue. But Tom was like, yeah, I wish I had more of that for my commercial reel. But the irony is he's shot like four features, and a lot of them have, you know, he's done
about
entire
suburbs,
like car chases and people running and things and all this stuff on streets and neighborhoods and everything. But when you're showing a commercial reel, you can't show a 4-minute scene from a movie, you know? So it is, in terms of a portfolio, it's tricky because unless you have a short that won Sundance and then two great commercials, then you would show the short. But if it was just like a short that played a couple, like Nantucket Film Festival, it doesn't really help you much in the commercials. And if you have some really great, slick commercials that are only 30 seconds, I don't know that it helps you that much in pitching a TV show, for instance.
I think in conversation, I tend to talk about my narrative work to commercial, to like agency people, because they tend to be big fans of narrative work, right? Like they're consuming a ton of content.
I mean, it's so cliche, but like they all fucking love Wes Anderson, like without any exception. And so it's you, like you can reference directors and things and they'll like them. But I think if you
I don't know that it goes the other way around, though. Do you know what I mean? Like if you were on a narrative set, you can be like, oh, well, I did this on a commercial one time for sure. But like studio people aren't impressed that you're signed at caviar or something like that. You know, caviar is a bad example because
they have like Taika Waititi or whatever.
Yeah. But like, they're not. Like, you talk about your Super Bowl spot and they'd be like, oh, cool. I think I saw that.
Yeah, you know? I find, and this is like, it's going to maybe come off as like a little creepy or something or thirsty, but I find that like when I'm working on narrative stuff and I'm also working on commercial things at the same time, I never go like, oh yeah, I'm shooting a commercial for Verizon right now or anything like that. But I'll be like, oh, I'm in New York right now. I have a scout tomorrow and that's why I'm here. And
sure.
It's like, just pre-feeding them the idea that I'm uber comfortable on set.
You're in demand.
People, yeah. In demand to some degree, and people are willing to spend serious money to fly me around the country and the world to do production 100%. Type things. But I don't talk to them 100%. About the content. I almost try to throw it away and make it seem like, oh, my day job is shooting million-dollar commercials, but right now I want to do this. $100,000.
I think that's exactly right. And look, I think it's always on a case by case because like some people, like you could meet a real commercial nerd, you know, at your studio or someone who has a similar background and comes from advertising or something and vice versa. But I guess, it's more common that advertising people, because they all love movies.
I'll say I've kind of noticed recently, like I've met some narrative filmmakers that also do commercials. And when they bring up the commercials, they'll be like, I kind of just like to make some money. And like, I kind of fell into this and like, I want to do this or I just got this opportunity. Mm-hmm. Like they kind of downplay it to me. And I'm like, you don't need to downplay it to me. Like, I think it's awesome. Like, I love commercials, you know, but I meet a lot of narrative people that are like embarrassed.
You're the only person I know who's like, I love commercials. Have you seen this latest spot or whatever? Like for them, unless they're purely in the commercial space. Yeah,
I know. I mean, I guess everyone I talk to, like on a regular basis, is, you know, when we're talking about jobs, we're talking about who's pitching things and what companies are involved and what agencies. I feel like we all love commercials and we like get excited, like, ooh, it's like Shaquille on a cruise ship, like that's cool. Like, and I'm pitching this. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before, but like...
I don't know why I call them Shaquille. I meant Shaq or Shaquille O'Neal. Not just Shaquille.
I'm on
first names
basis.
Sort
of friends with them? Yeah. Yeah, you know, Shaq just felt too personal, but like, he'd say hi to you in the hall. You have to like commercials to make them because it's too competitive otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I guess on that note, this episode, I apologize. I'm going to like brag a lot, or humble brag or whatever it is. I don't mean to be like this, but I feel like I have gotten really good at pitching on commercials and not, I don't mean necessarily the treatment part of it. I mean the phone call part of it. And it's something that we've all learned, you know, over the past 3 years. For those of you that don't know, it used to be when you pitched a commercial, you'd get on a phone call and you would hear each other, you know, you'd say, okay, now go to page 4 of the PDF. Now go to page 5 of the PDF. And it would just be a conversation, an audio conversation. But as Zoom and Google Meet and all that stuff came to be, now the de facto standard, I mean, and not just for pitching, like literally like I had a meeting with my accountant today and he's like, here, I'll send you a Google Meet. You know, and we're talking about our taxes. Like there's nothing, we're not sharing screens or anything. It's just, like, there's no reason for us to see each other other than to maybe make sure we're paying attention. But I've gotten, I think, really good at the meeting. And like, I've gotten feedback recently. And again, I'm not saying this for your sake because it's annoying to say, but I have gotten feedback recently from a few producers that are like, oh, you give really, really good meeting, which I've never heard that term. And it sounds oddly sexual, but I enjoy
it. You give good X, I think, is a common structure for being cheeky, but you know.
You give good dinner like date.
You give good parent.
Oh, you give good car wash.
A song.
That's what I told the guy washing my car the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the car wash without a car. I just walked through the car wash and then I said that to him.
Yeah, sure. The greasy strangler over here.
but so I feel like I've gotten really good at and I've talked about this on the podcast before, just acknowledging everyone on the Zoom. Sometimes there's like 12 people and just being like, who are you? What's your name? What acknowledging like what my background is. Everyone, I have a mirror behind me. Everyone mm-hmm. thinks that there's somebody sitting behind me. And like about a minute into every conversation, someone's like, oh, I thought there was somebody behind you. I'm realizing it's like your reflection. So there, I always have like a little bit ready for that. I've even like on some pitches, like I pitched on this dog toy thing and I put my wife used to paint portraits of dogs. So I put like some dog portraits behind me. I've become, I think, like really good at listening as mm-hmm. I'm talking nonstop and plucking things that people are saying and then re-saying them in my sentences.
Echoing it back to people. Oh, I love this point. I love that point. So you've outlined a number of skills that I think do transfer into the narrative world. Active listening, being attentive, showing people a little bit of personal time and really kind of digging in and showing some interest. All that right. stuff I think is valuable.
And that's to show them that you are like a collaborator. You're not a tyrant, mm-hmm. but you also are coming with ideas like, oh, I love what you said about that, about showing people that you're listening to them.
There is also a little bit of warm up, you know, like because we're in a video chat, it's a different deal than like walking from the waiting room and having some water and the assistant says hello and everyone kind of finds their spot at the table. It used to be like when you were pitching a show or just having a general meeting, there was kind of a natural flow that warmed people up.
Yeah.
You know, like you knew you weren't supposed to talk any real business until everyone was seated. So the journey from wherever you were waiting to that room is your warm-up space. You know, like mm-hmm. how was your weekend? Chit-chat sort of stuff. All that's gone now, right?
Yeah, I mean, you do it on the Zoom.
It's easy to just kind of, you do it on the Zoom, right? But what I'm saying is that the signals aren't as clear or aren't as delineated. And so it would be easy to just kind of jump straight into things without learning who people are or like, you know, again, just acclimating people. Right.
And I try to be really honest about that. I'll say like, oh, you know, Brent, I don't know if I've met you before. Whose team are you on? Like, I'll try to know the players, you know, if we didn't do the intros, a lot of times there's an intro. And then I do also, like, I try to detect the, like, awkward pause of, so are we going to start? And if it lasts for more than 2 seconds, I'll say something like, so you want to dive in? You know, I loved your brief. You want to walk me through it?
Yeah, yeah.
Or,
yeah, I'm really excited. I know everyone's really busy. I'd love to get started. Let's do this.
Yeah. And even more specific, I'll be like, you know, is it cool if I share my screen? Or do you want to tell mm-hmm. me a little bit about how you came up with that idea? Like, I'll try to give some sort of prompt mm-hmm. of where to go. A lot of times, you know, we'll be on calls with producers that are doing that. They're driving the show for us. But I try to, I guess I just want to avoid all awkwardness on every call mm-hmm. so that the people I'm talking to feel comfortable with me as like a potential collaborator for the long run. And by the way, one mm-hmm. other tip, I'm actually curious if you do this or not, but if it's in any sort of important meeting recently, I'd say like last 6 months, I'll use my mic, the mic I'm using now, my podcast mic.
Oh, interesting. I don't.
I'll say I have two reasons for it. Mm-hmm. Maybe three. One is, so we use these condenser mics, right? These Audio Technica, these AT2020 mm-hmm. mics. They are, we put our mouth really close to them, so the signal to noise ratio is really high. So if there's a lawnmower mm-hmm. or a kid yelling in the background or a car or construction, they're really good at focusing on our voice. Yeah.
Other people can't hear.
Yeah. Number two, I can swing it away from my mouth. You know, like if I take a drink of water or something, but more importantly, a lot of times I'm typing, you know, I'm like looking something mm-hmm. up or I want to make sure I'm pronouncing someone's name right or someone referenced something and I forgot about it and I'll look it up. And I want to make sure that the clicking of my keyboard isn't being picked up by the microphone that's usually on closer to your webcam mm-hmm. or on your desktop, your laptop or whatever. And then number three, I have heard.
Well, do you put yourself on mute or no?
I do put myself on mute, but when I'm presenting or I'm like the main person kind of leading the meeting, I try to not, because I really like giving people reactions, you know, like I like mm-hmm. laughing and being sure. like, oh yeah. Oh, totally. Me too.
Yeah. I mean, just listeners at home, I want you all to hear what it sounds like when I'm typing on my keyboard. So like, say, hey, Oren, this is such a great meeting. You know, I really do love so-and-so's work. What was that movie that they did?
Well, you're typing like extra loud though, right?
No, I'm not.
You're not?
No, I have one of those It was actually your keyboard.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's like a high tactility, like springy keyboard, which I love.
Oh, right.
But I often will get roasted for... I can't hear you typing at all, no. I'll get roasted for
typing super loud.
People being like... Did you drop your mic on top of a keyboard that right. you're just slapping?
Yeah, well, so I bet if you're not using your podcast mic, it's even louder. And I have this mouse. Yeah, I love it. I've endorsed it, the Logitech MX3 mouse.
I think you told me
about it. But the click is really loud relative to like a Magic Mouse or something, or even a trackpad. So that was like one of the first things, because I never want someone to think I'm not paying attention to them. It's like very important to me, whether I'm pitching or, you know, like getting briefed or doing auditions or whatever. But the last thing, and this is kind of funny, but people do say sometimes they're like, wow, your voice is like so crisp and clear and loud. And it's because I'm talking like right into the mic. It's like, you know, half an inch away from my mouth. So for all those reasons, I personally, for anything important, use a microphone. And I wonder if I didn't have a podcast and didn't have this mic set up here all the time, if I would do that too. But I would recommend it. I think it's kind of nice. I probably like maybe for a more casual pitch, I kind of would distance it from my mouth a little bit like this, but I would still use it, especially so I can look up. And this pitch I wanted to tell you about today, I'm pitching with another person. So when you are not the only person speaking, you're taking turns, you can kind of be looking things up while the other person is speaking. And that's like another reason. Well, or take a sip of water or whatever, and you can swing the mic away.
You can also, I know this because we do it in podcasting. Not only can you hit mute, but like if I'm trying to indicate like, oh, it's Oren's turn to talk, I would lean back and like not be so close to the mic. And I think that subliminally shows people like, oh, okay, I'm listening right now. But when I have something to say, I lean into the mic to show people like I'm going to chime in a second. We use that technique when we're interviewing someone so that I can try and get a word in edgewise. And then I can be like, oh, you ignored the mic move again. Okay.
Yeah, that's funny.
Great. He's asking for tips and tricks. Cool.
You know, I'm working on this project now for Pinterest. I think I talked about it before, but it's they're really into Microsoft Teams. Like every meeting is Teams. And they have there's like a lot of people on the call sometimes. And they have like a raise your hand thing. I guess Google Meet has that too. Maybe they all do.
I think most of
but
them do.
Yeah. They're the only people I've seen use it. Like someone will present
it's really corny. It's, like, it's really, really corny.
it's kind of funny. But it works. They're like, yeah, Alexa, you have a question? Matt, you have a question? So-and-so, you have a question?
Yeah. Yeah.
I started doing it instead of interrupting.
Pretty embarrassing corporate sort of stuff. But yeah, I think it's worthwhile. But you can't do that when you're pitching, right? Like if it's you and your partner and you're both kind of like tossing the ball back and forth, it's not like you're talking about character and then your partner goes like does the virtual hand raise to be like, I'd just like to add that this character, their backstory is X, Y, and Z, you know. Like it needs to feel more organic.
But if her and I are going back and forth nonstop with no pauses and the person we're pitching to has a question and they don't want to cut us off, that like that it would work then.
That's when it works.
And I
well.
By the way, that's like my other tip is like pay attention to the chat. Because a lot of times people, if you're on a big meeting, someone will like make a joke or write a comment about something you just said. And personally, I always acknowledge them. I'm like, oh, you know, Roger said that he like that happened to him once. I'm like, sorry, Roger. I just anything you can do to make it seem
to include people,
more inclusive. Do it, even if it's like the intern or whatever. They might be the tiebreaker at the end of the day of whether someone wants to give you a job or not. But I wanted to talk real quick about the pitching. So the way I pitch commercials, and then I want to hear, obviously, your take on this. Sorry.
Really?
Not really. I'm just saying that to make you feel included.
Okay, cool.
The way I pitch commercials.
Yeah, I'll just raise my hand virtually next time.
I have a treatment, right? It's like a PDF, a Google Doc, a video, whatever it is. I share my screen and I just take them through. Yeah. And the way I design my treatments is they're image based, right? So it'll be a 40 page treatment and I'll have an image on performance and tone. And I'll say like, it'll be a picture of Zoe Saldana walking down a hallway. And I'll be like, you know, I'll tell them why I chose that picture. I'm like, you know, like a Zoe Saldana type, like, you know how she's kind of like can be kind of quiet and nice and like intellectual, but then she can turn into like a badass in like 2 seconds. And I think that that like the turn will be like that. So I'll talk about the image. I won't talk about the text at all. And then I'll be like, okay, locations, you know? So you guys all know this, like the spaceship from Dune or whatever. And I'll have the pictures. And what I'm talking about, they're looking at the images and I'm describing why they're looking at those images, and I'm walking them through direction, wardrobe, script. You know, when I do the script breakdown, I'm like, okay, we're going to open up on a close up of this person.
But you're not just to reiterate. So you've got an image and then you've got a block of text that says tone or whatever. You're telling them why they're looking at the image. I love that. Are you pulling key terms or threads or anything from the text or no?
The title of the page I'm pulling, and then like this last pitch that I did yesterday. So the brand identity in their brief to me, when they're like, hey, we're talking about this brand, and these are 4 words that are important to the brand. We think of the brand as sophisticated, trustworthy, modern, and it has personality. It shouldn't feel boring. And so I said to them when I was talking about casting, I was like, oh, I love literally your brand tone is like how I would describe the person that I think we should cast. Someone that's sophisticated. Mm-hmm. And by sophisticated, I mean this, like they dress a certain way. They have a certain posture.
Right, but I'm asking you specifically. Right.
My answer to that is in my text, I had those 4 words embedded in the text and I bolded them and made them a different color so that when I'm presenting it, I remember to like touch on those 4 items. Mm-hmm. But I don't ever read anything. Even if I have a joke, like I had some explosion gif or something in my treatment yesterday. Sure. And I had some text saying like, this brand loves explosions or whatever, but I'll rephrase that text. I never, ever read off of a treatment or presentation or anything intentionally.
So I have been under that school for a long time. Yeah, use it as a reminder. You know, maybe I would throw...
It's like a slideshow when you're presenting it. But you need to make it work also as a readable document without you presenting it.
Correct. And then I'd worked with some companies where like they would just literally read the text.
That's
and
like not would, a good presenter though, right? Like objectively.
Sure.
As viewers, when you're on a call, because I've tried to read the text. Like I was on a meeting the other day when someone was presenting a page to us and they were reading the text. And I was literally trying to read along with them, but all I can do is like look at the image on the page.
Look at the image. Yeah, definitely.
Our brain has trouble with that.
What's tricky is that the presentation is for the people in the room, but we all know that there are other people who aren't there for whatever reason where this document is going to get sent to them, or they're going to need to be reminded of what you say. So if I'm not saying that you need to have it verbatim or even that I have a hard and fast opinion on this, but there is an issue when the difference between what you're saying and what is written is so vast that it doesn't even really match beyond maybe the core intent, I think is a little tricky. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And like I don't mean that. Like I always am pitching the same thing that I wrote, but I'll write.
But the copy is different.
In prose. Yeah. Like I'll say, for instance, we'll do this. And then I'll put in a joke and I'll put an asterisk and a footnote about that thing. When I pitch it out loud, I leave those jokes for the reader later. I mean, I pitch a lot of comedy, right?
Yeah,
But I'll give you an example, like the Rebel Wilson thing. I would write it when I describe a shot, like for a commercial, I'd say like, we open up close on Rebel's face. The camera slowly pulls back and we realize that she's holding something above her head. The camera continues pulling back and we see it's a metal pole, potentially like helicopter skids. We start seeing her hair moving in the wind, you know? And I just kind of paint the picture in words, but the way I pitch it, that's like really boring to read out to someone. I'd say the way I would pitch it out loud in person is I'd say like, so I thought it would be awesome if Rebel's doing something like really action movie-ish in the beginning, you know, like hanging off a helicopter. So we open up on her and I like literally would act it out. I put my hands up in the air and I'd be like, and she's holding on to like this helicopter skids and the camera's pulling
and
out.
You're using the frame almost to like replicate like a thumbnail version of what the actual shot would
be. So like we have a shot in there where she picks up a knife, a charcuterie knife, and throws it. and the camera, you know, like Robert Rodriguez style spins and sideways. And I have like an image, mm-hmm. like an animated GIF of that in the treatment. But when I pitch it in person, I have my laptop and I turn my laptop camera to show them like what the mm-hmm. move would mm-hmm. look like. So I'm almost like ignoring the treatment at some parts, at the parts that I can act out on camera. I try mm-hmm. to do that. And I just find that like when you're ducking, when a character's ducks or whatever, it just feels like more visceral and people are watching you almost more than looking at
you're performing. Yeah, you're performing.
So
yeah.
To switch to narrative, though, so I feel like I've kind of got a lock on the commercial pitching. Not that mm-hmm. I win a lot or even like most times, but I feel like the meeting itself is always recently, like the last year has been pretty good. But I'm pitching literally beat by beat, detail by detail. And really in commercial pitching, mm-hmm. it's really detailed, right? This is the wardrobe. This is the casting. This is like the location. And this is, I thought the door would be this color and this would be this color.
Yeah, I think the thing that's tricky about this conversation is that most of the things that you've said so far, even breaking down like a sequence, like an important sequence in a film, I think you could do that sort of work of explaining like this is how the intro works or this is how the finale works or whatever. But what we're leaving out is that you've described maybe
like 15 seconds,
seven slides out of 40. And that there's a lot of like, here's the current brand color palette. This is how the set would work with that. You know, a lot of stuff that's really, really, really in the weeds that you just literally can't do for a feature.
Right.
You can't prep in the amount of time that you would have. And also like,
well, it's the presentation time meeting is the exact same. That's the hard part. So a 30-second commercial, I would pitch in about 20 minutes and a 6-hour, 12 half hour episode seasonal arc of this YA show. I'm also trying to pitch in 20 minutes. And that's where the problems arise because I try to practice pitch this with Julie. And I felt like I was really on fire in the beginning. I'm like, this is what it's about. This is the theme. This is the location. This is like, it's a show about fairies, right? But we call them fae, not fairies. And a little bit about like how we treat the subject matter and these parallel worlds that exist. And then we go into the characters and it gets a little muddier, right? Because we're just, you want to know a little bit more about each character. You want to know what their defining traits are and some examples of how those traits are shown. And you want each character to segue into the next character naturally. So you're not just making a list of characters. You don't want to be like, so then we have Matt. He likes to wear hats. Then we have Oren. He talks too much. We want to be like, and Matt's podcasting partner is Oren, who pisses him off all the time. And that's why he's been taking it out on his yard. And so there's a little bit more storytelling in the characters. But then once you get into the story outline, that's when we completely fell apart because I pitched the pilot, which took me a long time because I feel like there's all these important pieces to set up. And then we have 11 episodes left and we're like at 25 minutes into the pitch. And I'm like, I don't know where we go from here because we still have so much more to cover.
Yeah.
And so I know the conclusion to where we got to of how to pitch this 12 episode show, but I'm curious. I've been talking a lot. I want to give you a chance to tell me how you break down a pitch, given that you have like 20 to 30 minutes to pitch in 12 whole episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so pitching an entire season of something is really tricky, right?
But it's kind of on par with pitching a feature, right? Because you're pitching like the whole 2-hour story.
And also similarly, you're pitching a pilot, right? Like, unlike with commercials, the core difference is like really commercials are a lot. It's not just what your voice is and what you're bringing to the table, but how you're going to execute it. And with narrative, it tends to be the assumption that you can execute, otherwise you wouldn't be in the room in the first place. So it's specifically really what's the take. It's really more of a writing meeting than it is a directing or producing meeting, right? So that's the first thing.
Yeah. And in all these, as a director, as a writer, commercial or narrative, I'd say we're always, the main thing we're pitching is tone and ourselves as someone as you should trust to do this thing, to make this thing.
So unpacking that, right, a little bit, when you're saying you've got 20 or 30 minutes and you're pitching tone, I think as a younger filmmaker, I would get into the specifics of how I execute the tone. What does that mean tangibly? And the more time I've spent with people who, frankly, aren't, their area of expertise is not technical.
Not production, necessarily.
Not production.
But they sell stories.
You need to show them how you're going to sell this tone. And show them that you understand why that tone is important and makes sense, and that you understand when I say scary, I mean this flavor of scary and not that flavor of scary, and that we all want that to be the same thing. But if you say anything close to technical jargon, you lose them, or you're wasting your breath, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can say, I got these cool vintage lenses, maybe, if you wanted to, like, to add some texture. Even that is, like, frankly, too technical. So, like, it's really like, what are the ways in which you can bring the creative to life in a way that's specifically you? That's what you have to live in. Whereas I would go much, much, much deeper on those nitty gritty aspects in a commercial, right? Because we're really talking about 6 hours versus 30 seconds, right? So understanding character, understanding those obstacles. So pitching a pilot and pitching a season, you know, are not totally disparate. Let me ask you, when we're talking specifically about this project, have people bought in on this season, or are there people who are coming in fresh who don't know a ton about the project yet?
Well, so we have this project works in three steps, right? We wrote we made a deck. We actually recorded, made a podcast proof of concept, a pilot, which is completely 100% thrown out into the trash can by this point. But it was what got our foot in the door and got us to develop this project. And we showed them a deck that was probably like a 30 or 40 page deck that had tone and setup and story and kind of where we wanted to go and end. But we had, I think it split up into three acts. We're like, the first three episodes will cover mm-hmm. this. The next three episodes will cover this. The next three episodes will cover this. And then off of that, we got a deal. The deal was we get paid to write an outline, a 12-episode outline, pretty detailed. So our outline right now starts on page 13 and ends on page 46. But this is in a deck format. So a lot of, mm-hmm. of these pages are just full-page images to kind of give you tone.
This is not a Word document.
Not a Word document. Yeah. It's a Google Slide document. And then if they like this, then they will pay us more to write the pilot. And if they like the pilot, they'll mm-hmm. pay us more to write the remaining 11 episodes. But here we have all 12 episodes. And by the way, 12 is a number that came from them. They said we want basically 12 20-minute episodes. So we have the 12 episodes, pretty much every single scene written out in this mm-hmm. presentation. So that's why it's like hard to present, because we want them to know what it is. And my writing partner, Julie, she actually took a course recently, like an online course of how to pitch shows. And mm-hmm. what she was told in that course, which I thought was great, a bunch of great stuff about characters and themes and setting it up. But in terms of pitching the story, was pitch the pilot, pitch the ending, and pitch, choose like 3 to 5 set pieces. Beats.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. And with the addition of making sure that there's causality and that you see that character growth as well, right? So it can't just be like, this thing happens and then this cool set piece happens and I'm so excited about it, it's going to sound awesome, or this or that or whatever. They have to show the character growth and convey at least the basic beats of the plot, right? Basically what I mean is, and this is something that I've been constantly relearning my entire career, but a lot in the show that I'm currently working on. If you don't have narrative causality, people tune out. It's a hard fact, right? And so what I mean by that, it's the South Park rules is the easiest way to explain it. If your characters are going through different beats and then, doesn't work. Your character wants something, they do something, but, and therefore, that's how it works, right? So Oren wants to eat a sandwich, so therefore he goes and makes a sandwich, but he's out of mayonnaise, so he's got to go to the store, right? So he's at the store, he's looking for the mayonnaise, but he runs into his ex-girlfriend. Like, that is a story. The things between that, if you don't have that, you do lose people. I'm saying, even if you boil it down to 5 beats, you gotta make it those.
If your setup is good, then people, you can leave out a lot and jump to a scene in the middle. You're saying your movie is...
You shouldn't go like, oh, Oren makes a sandwich. And in trying to get his sandwich, he ends up at this place.
Right. But
you can fast forward through things for
the
sure.
The sandwich example is, it's hard to latch onto because it's so specific and minor. But so my show, it's about this girl, this high school girl that has some... bone, like some weird growths coming out of her back. And we know that eventually these wings are going to sprout out of her back. But we set up kind of her, she's an outcast because she's kind of uncomfortable with her body and all these things in school. And she befriends this other outcast that everyone knows is like this bad boy that just transferred schools. Everyone kind of has heard shady things about him. And then this girl at the school dies and everyone is 100% sure he's a killer. And this is the guy she's been getting close to. And so they have this, and her father also happens to be kind of like a low level police officer on the force who would like love to move up to detective and manage to help solve this case. And he wants his daughter to have nothing to do with this kid. So they're kind of sneaking away when she's hanging out with him. And in the third episode is like when her wings come out for the first time and she is trying to hide them from everyone. So she has to like run away to her house with this guy who she's trying to keep away from her dad, but also not show him the wings. So she's kind of like, you know, they're about to kiss and she feels a sharp pain in her back and she runs and slams the door shut. She's like, you got to go. And he has no idea what's going on. Like, I think you can pitch that scene and the setup. And there's so many scenes that happen in between that.
Sure. 100%. But we understand the character motivations and we understand what's keeping them from getting what they want and why they're making those decisions. So it all makes sense and is causal. It's just when, if you leave out those character motivations and if the bad version of that pitch is like this girl, she's going to have wings and then she's about to kiss this guy and then her wings pop out. Like you miss out on all of the stuff that makes it.
Right. The stakes.
The stakes. Yeah, exactly. But you can't have stakes without that causality.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And all I'm saying is like that causality can be kind of character based and big. It doesn't have to be as like plot based as like he's Adam Mann is. And so once you set up the things correctly, so now of course we know that at some point her dad is gonna find out about this. The guy that she, you know, that she has this relationship is going to find out about the wings. There's going to be some scene where she learns how to fly that's going to be, you know, unsuccessful in some ways. And so I think you can start seeing in your brain how these various
the big
moments are going to add up and be fun. And then somehow she's going to help prove this guy's innocence and realize that the killer was actually after her instead of after this high school girl.
And what's tricky is that I think the further into the show you get, the more you kind of want to yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, well, so obviously she's going to fly at some point.
Right. I mean, in a pitch, I wouldn't say yada, yada.
Yeah, but like, and then you fast forward to the moment where, of course, this happens or that happens. Beats that you can anticipate happening, but without that connective tissue. And it is, if you do that too much, you do just start listing set pieces.
Right.
And that's not a story.
Yeah.
And that's the tricky part, right? That's why you want more time. That's why it's whittling down what are the pertinent details that get the viewer and or the listener invested the whole way through with the amount of time that you have allotted.
Yeah. And in the commercial treatment, in the commercial pitch, the reaction will be like, wow, you've thought of every detail, you know? And that's like a good reaction. And the narrative pitch, you want them to be like, wow, you're a good storyteller. I can't wait to find out what, you know, I want to know more. And so in the commercial pitch, it's about giving them all the details and showing them you've thought things out and listened to them. And in the narrative one, it's about giving them just enough to know the story and to want more. And those are two kind of different skills that I have another practice tomorrow. And we're basically going to keep practice pitching it because my writing partner doesn't pitch commercials at all. So I think I'm pretty good at like just riffing on random things that I see. But the other issue, which is so easy in commercials, is I'm pitching the image. But when we're doing this narrative stuff and so many things are happening and we have pages that are just 100% text, I don't know what to show on screen while I'm pitching those set pieces.
Yeah.
And my deck is not built out to be verbally pitched. So some of my images, when we were practicing, they're like not really in the right order. Like I'll pitch a flying set piece and there's a girl on a phone, you know?
As commercial filmmakers, we've talked about this before, because our skills in creating decks and showing the visuals paired with, you know, our presentation and then also with great copy, that becomes a superpower that helps us stand out.
Yeah.
And I think like when we trade decks around, when you see a deck from a person who does commercials, who's pitching their feature, it's just a totally different class of creative than a person who's just a born and bred writer. You know, you're just like, oh, okay, this is, we just have a totally different wheelhouse.
Right.
And that's, you know, writers are great at writing. So like,
yeah,
it makes complete
sense.
But
even you were saying like that it's interesting that I even have a deck to pitch this show, because usually we'd pitch, you know, even 3 years ago, we'd pitch a show in like a Word document.
An outline.
Yeah.
An outline should be a Word document.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, we're pitching with Temple Hill, who's pitched like a bunch of shows. They made mm-hmm. Twilight and Maze Runner and all these things. And because we said to them, like, are we going overboard with all these images and things? And they're like, no, we think this is like really, this is really selling the tone.
Helps.
But
yeah,
the funny thing is we're pitching a podcast. There are no visuals, but we're using images to pitch the audio show. And the only real difference is that we have like a few sample scenes written out and we don't like read them out loud or anything, but we say, hey, like right at the beginning of the story, here's a sample scene. So the main character, Nikki, her best friend from high school, part of the reason she only had basically one friend, they were like kind of the two outcasts, and she moved to Japan. So now she's like on the other side of the world. And my dad lives in Israel, so I know what it's like to be like exactly like, you know, half a day apart from someone. And 90% of our communication is done through voicemail. And this is how she communicates with her friend. And we get a lot of the inner monologue and a lot of the inner thoughts from listening to the voicemails she leaves for her best friend who lives on the other side of the world. And so we try to like plant some of the audio techniques we'll use to tell the story and show some inner monologue in ways that are hard in podcasts because they're not novels. There's not a lot of first person narration and there's no visuals where you can see people doing things and thinking about things. So we try to do a little bit of that, but still in pitching an audio play,
which is a way of saying like, oh, I'm illustrating the things that we're doing in a unique way. Whereas like, which you would do, I think in any sort of narrative pitch, like, oh, let me explain what bullet time is, even though like you've seen plenty of cool kung fu fights. Right. If you're pitching the Matrix
or like, whatever, have you seen the Time Traveler's Wife?
I haven't.
Actually, I don't care much for the movie. The book is like really incredible, but it's,
yeah, that's right. People love
it. It's
the
about
book.
This guy who time travels to, he doesn't control it. He like spontaneously time travels to different times in his life. So he might be 35 and he's time traveling to when he was 62 or to when he's 7 and he's in a relationship with this woman, Claire. And sometimes he'll go to, he's 50 and she's 7 or he's 50 and she's 70. So every chapter title is like, I forget his name. Let's say it's Ben. It's like Ben 50, Claire 7. Ben. And they use text as this really amazing tool to show you now it's more like a father-daughter relationship. Now they're husband and wife. Now he's like the kid. And so even in that, I'm sure when you pitch that, that's like one of the main things you're like,
yeah, you have
we're going
to
use this
like,
text.
Oh, this is how we were going to
orient.
We're doing
you.
Title cards for this. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow. Yeah. So it's been a learning experience. We're going to practice again tomorrow. Have you pitched before with someone?
No, I've always been solo. That's a good point.
It's really hard because we have very different styles. Mm-hmm. I'm very much like a nonstop talker and she's like a thinker, a pauser.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can feel a little bit the disconnect between like my momentum and not that one is better than the other. Hers feels like more deliberate and mine feels more frantic. But
well, and to bring it back to the theme of the show, the reason it's not just that you're quote unquote frantic, you've trained yourself to show your enthusiasm and your passion in a specific way. And I know this for a fact because we've talked about it.
By the way, I think the podcast helps a lot in just keeping the conversation going.
Yeah, absolutely. Like being able to engage, listen, synthesize, all that stuff, but, which is another way of saying practice. You can just talk to people about your project and listen to them and vice versa. You don't have to.
You don't have to compete with our podcasts. Okay. Okay,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah, please. But you've trained yourself to hone a presentational style that has worked well for you in the commercial space. There are plenty of writers I've seen come in who are more pure writers who do not have the presentational chops because they're not doing it twice a week for the last 10 years. You know, you come in, you package things up, maybe once a season you pitch something. And look, they also are pitching things in the room, in a writer's room, and like they have to stand up for their own jokes and things like that. But the level of polish and anticipation that we have is different. And so it makes sense that there would be a duality between the two of you. Just to kind of summarize, because we've talked a lot, the real takeaways are keep the stakes apparent, keep the characters apparent, spend most of your time on the premise and finale, and the beats in between, wow them as best you can, but make sure that the growth is apparent, the arc is apparent, and ideally that's through a handful of the most exciting set pieces, the things that you're most excited about. And when I say set pieces, especially with a podcast, but it could be with anything, I don't mean the coolest action sequence. I mean the beats where major character moments are happening. And ideally, some of those are action oriented, but that could be a kiss, that could be a breakup, that could be
overhearing a conversation,
all of that stuff.
Yeah. And my one tip for new people is, to me, one of the worst things you can be in a pitch is coy. And I've seen people do this too, which is they're like, and you'll find out the ending if you buy the project. Mm-hmm. Like, the reason we're saying pitch the ending is because if you don't have a good beginning and a good ending, like nothing else matters in terms of people believing that you can tell a story, because anyone can come up with a good premise and a good setup, but making it also pay off at the end is the hard part. So you're showing that,
and also
you're showing that the end matters, that this journey was worth going on.
The coyness also exhibits a misunderstanding of what this meeting is and what the relationship is. You can't hide the ingredients from someone. They're here to buy the ingredients.
Right.
So
it might be gluten free. Taste it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, no, you need to tell me you're wasting my time, and that you don't know means that maybe you're not ready to do the, maybe you need more experience before we get into this relationship.
And also, if you think that like your secret twist, that, you know, your sixth sense, it turns out that he was a ghost the whole time, is the magic that is what you're selling, and you don't realize that the execution and how you get there is just as, or probably way more important than
way more important.
Super experienced.
Yeah. I think there's this thing where people think that, like, when they have an awesome idea, they think that's going to be the key that breaks them into Hollywood. And then with any experience, you realize that literally everyone has a ton of incredible ideas. Like, a great blockbuster idea is the prerequisite before you even get in the door.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing I think that's worth mentioning that actually applies, oddly enough, to both commercials and narrative, is if you can pitch your personal connection to the material, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And obviously you wrote a story about your niece who is basically raising her parents because they are differently abled or not neuroatypical or whatever, like our guest Matt Smuggler. That's great. But if you're making a commercial for Little Caesars Pizza and some guy...
And you grew up on Little Caesars and like... You know, you make sure that you and your wife always order it with the this spice and that spice or whatever. You know, you love the cheesy bread sticks. That's good, too.
Yeah,
for sure.
And they want to see when you're pitching on the commercial or on the TV show, they want to see how excited you are, right, about it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I love pizza. It makes me like just the sound of cheese makes me excited. And that's what I want to hit on here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
OK, so after pitching, assuming you got the job, We want to talk real quick about prepping a commercial versus prepping an episodic show or a feature. Maybe let's stick to a feature now because it's kind of an easier comparison. I personally don't think they're that different. I think they're different from a storytelling point of view. Like, you as a director need to think a lot more about character arcs and rehearsals and where the actors are going and all that stuff. But from a production standpoint, locations, cameras, crew, all those things, I think the only real palpable difference to me is number of locations, you know, a number of actors tend to be more, but some commercials have 50 locations and 50 actors too.
Yeah. I think there's a couple things. One, I think that the thoroughness with which one can prep and should prep a 30-second commercial.
Right. Storyboarding every shot, timing every line of dialogue.
All that stuff. Yeah. You kind of can't realistically do that unless you're in something with, like, you know, a year of prep.
But, like, yeah. It's, and you hear that, like, Michael Bay and these huge directors don't even storyboard their, like, action sequences, yeah. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But the reason that we're so preoccupied with the prep on a 30-second spot is because the runtime is so specific and so finite that you're really trying to make sure that all of the things you need to get into this 30 seconds happen in the right time and pace, right?
But that said, how much time are you spending on that in your prep of a commercial?
I mean, a significant amount, a couple days, you know? Yeah.
Like, you're worrying about timing for a couple days during prep?
I am putting together the storyboards, cutting those in, recording audio, cutting down all of the potential lifts or whatever.
You do that on every commercial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I find it to be a really helpful tool for communicating the vision to the rest of the team and getting agency excited and making sure that they know what I'm intending to make. Because before this, we've just talked about it, right? And now they really see it and they see how it works. And, like, I'm using it as an opportunity to reinforce things that I think are going to work or punch holes in things that I think aren't going to work. There's a lot of politics to them as well. And sometimes it's like, hey, I really tried this and I don't think it's going to work. Or, oh, I tried it and I think it's going to work great. Yeah. And then on this last job, the Reddit job, I then did video boards on top of that just because the set design was so specific in one location in particular. But that's what the root of all of that is, that you are serving a totally different purpose with commercials. It's about the product, right? And the prep on a narrative piece, on a feature, it's about the characters in the story, right? And so who cares if a scene is 5 minutes long when you thought it was really going to be 4.5 minutes long, right? Like, that's not what's important. And so the way that you decide what your locations are, all of those things, the schedule, all of that stuff, the priorities are different, right? And so that's a pretty fundamental difference in terms of the way that you see prep working. The mechanics are all the same, more or less.
Yeah. I think, like, it's mainly a function of length, though, because I'm doing this, like, 1 hour long branded thing, and I'm pretty much shooting it like how I would shoot a 1 hour TV show or like a short feature or something. Like, I'm breaking down the scene. I'm not storyboarding every shot, you know. I have more of like an approach. This is how we shoot these scenes. Breakdowns of locations and cast, you know, schedule it. I think we're going to shoot it over the course of 6 days or something like that. So, you know, it is for a product. The product and the client and the agency and the stakeholders are probably a little different than a feature. I've never done like a studio feature where I don't have the final say, you know. From a technical point of view, I find them to be very similar. And then just from a storytelling point of view, I find like my internal conversations and the conversations with the actors and all that to be different. But I don't know. I don't find them to be shockingly different.
That's the work, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the directing of it. Like everything else is just preparing for those moments.
Yeah. I will say the casting is quite a bit different. And because recently for commercials, I really just want to see the actor do the four words that they're going to say in the commercial and just get them, nail them, take a little bit of direction, and that's it. And in a longer form thing, I want to see that they are thinking about the dialogue, that they're embodying the character, that they can maybe improvise a little bit or add to it or help me figure out blocking.
And improv can just show that they understand in another way. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you necessarily are going to be like, hey, well, this is a riff-a-palooza.
Yeah, and I don't mean it. Improv is jokes, and that's comedy necessarily, but just like to be able to think like the character. And in commercials, honestly, we don't really need that. Like your look might be more important, or your vibe or your energy.
Yeah. I think the other big shift when it comes to shooting is that there's not necessarily a client and an agency of people looking over your shoulder. And so even if there's a studio or an EP or things like that, you have more agency over whether or not you think you got it.
Yeah. Also, the stakes are kind of lower in a weird way, because let's say you're shooting for 5 days or 50 days or somewhere in between. If you mess up on day one, there's probably time to fix what you've done. You know, on a commercial, you're rarely shooting for more than like a week. And oftentimes you're shooting for 1 day.
If you're not returning to the location, or you can't steal an insert. Yeah,
but we've all worked on features where we're like, oh, this scene's not working. Let's write a new one halfway through the production.
Sure.
And then shoot it, right? And then it saves the whole movie. So, but on a commercial, I've never done that, you know, maybe one out of 100, like writing a new scene, you know, we might pivot like, oh, it's raining, so let's see if we can set the scene inside, indoors, but that's about as far as you would stretch on a commercial. The shooting though, now that you moved on to that, like that's where for me, the timing of the commercial is where I get kind of nuts. Cause I'm like, oh, this is really funny, but it's just like 3 seconds too long, you know?
Yeah.
How can we do it? And then I start directing out of fear. On a narrative, I don't feel like I need a ton of coverage, but on a commercial, I always want to get coverage, because I know that this shot might be 2 seconds too long and I'll need to cut around it. In a feature, I'd much rather do like a one or like a steady cam shot that goes over here, and maybe I'll get one, like an insert shot of a hand picking something up so I can change takes. But I know that if this, like you said, if this take is 38 seconds versus 29 seconds, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is that thing of like going from, oh, this is exactly what I intended in the scene and I'm going to stick to it, to like, you do that enough times where it like doesn't totally work and you're like, well, maybe I'll start covering my butt a little bit more and shooting more coverage just in case, to then it becoming generic. You know, like coverage isn't inherently bad, but if you're not thoughtful about your coverage, if you're just kind of hosing it down, so to speak, then all of a sudden you're just stuck with a bunch of, you know, master two shot over scenes.
Yeah.
Rinse and repeat.
This shoot I just did last week, I just want to shoot as wide as I could possibly, basically put the widest lens possible, put the camera as far back possible until the agency complained. I just wanted to do wide shots. And then at the end of each scene, I would just put one, like the long lens, I was like, just get one last final take of this person in close up if they need it. And today the edits are starting to stream in and they're using a lot of the wide stuff. I think it looks
That's cool.
Awesome.
The wide stuff also, when you're shooting commercials, you don't know where the majority of the people are going to be seeing it, right? Are they going to be watching it on their phone in a 9x16 in between Instagram stories, or are they going to be watching it on TV? Yeah.
Are they going to have audio?
Is the sound going to be on or not? You're in a place in your career now where you're pretty aware when it's a true broadcast campaign with some digital support versus a digital campaign that in success could go to broadcast, right? And so the reason that that's important is because broadcast is passive and audio is always on. So you don't have to say the brand name in the first 5 seconds in a broadcast spot because you're assuming people aren't changing the channel because they want to watch the rest of The Bachelor and they're going to sit through your commercial and maybe they're going to go pee or like grab a cookie or whatever, but we don't have any control over that. And that it's also on a big screen.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it's digital, probably sounds off, probably trying to hit that skip YouTube button, all of that stuff. And so I think that is a really distinct difference in terms of the way that you can approach wide shots versus close-ups, all of that stuff.
Yeah. That's why I think a good commercial is just so impressive. Like you see the work from like Pinterest and Facebook and the spots they do. There's this awesome WhatsApp campaign right now about privacy. I've been seeing in like 9x16 on Instagram and I'm like, this is just so well shot. Like these great wide shots, great color grade, great lighting, great framing. And I think people see it and they're like, okay, whatever. It's a woman opening a door and talking to some guy. When you, yeah, those great digital spots are like really hard to nail.
Mm-hmm.
In yeah. my opinion.
Well, and if you know that they're digital only, I think that helps.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's this Lego campaign right now that's just so, so good in 9x16. And I'm like so hyper aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like it's very, the easy 9x16 spots are like people, basically the UGC, like the stuff where people are shooting at themselves. Like, I just got this new thing, this cup holder. Yeah, and it's amazing. And those work. I mean, you're, I'm sure, know more about that than me. But when you see something that you would be proud to have on your reel that also works, that's that's the magic. Well, anyway, I'd love to hear from you all. Like, if you feel like you're a dual filmmaker, if you make features and shorts or commercials and industrials, or
how they overlap, what are those skills? We left out a ton of stuff, I'm sure.
I'm sure we will revisit this topic at some other time. Matt and I are just talking about what we're doing these weeks.
So
let us know what you think of the episode. Also, if you're getting bored of these non-guest episodes, we'd love to hear from you at justshootapod@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Instagram. You can hit us up on Twitter. I've been really, I don't know, I really enjoy interacting with people on Instagram recently. Or email. Email us justshootapod@gmail.com. We will read everything and we will respond sometimes. But we will definitely read it. We'd love to hear from you. And yeah, if you want to find me, the easiest way is I'm on Instagram at @okaplan.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Unlow. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. And produced by Tyler Schmall. And you're listening to music provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Goodbye.